Good morning, everybody. It's 9 o'clock, so we will commence. I welcome you here this morning and officially open the meeting and acknowledge the past and present traditional owners and custodians of the land on which we're meeting, the Whadjuk people of the Noongar Nation. This is a development assessment panel meeting, so it will be held in accordance with the development assessment panel regulations, and I've given permission for the recording of the meeting for the purposes of minute taking only, and no other recording should be undertaken. Just so that everyone's aware of the process today, the agenda paper is out. I'm assuming that most of you have read them, so that we will go through the meeting process. When we come to deputations, we do have quite a number today, so we would ask that everybody is polite and quiet and listens to everybody that is going to speak. There's not an opportunity for the community to ask questions at that time. The panel will have opportunities to ask questions at the end of deputations. So, moving back to the agenda, we have apologies today from Specialist Member Michael Hardy and also from the Local Government Member from Town of Bassendean, the Mayor, Renee McLennan. We have no members on leave of absence, and all DAP meeting minutes are available on the DAP website, so you can access them. Declaration for due consideration. Have all panel members read the material provided? I feel you have had sufficient time to actually digest it. We were adjourned the meeting last time because of late material, so thank you. Disclosures of interest. So we did actually have one from... both councillors have advised me that they participated in Town of Bassendean Council meetings in relation to this meeting. However, that is actually them performing their roles as councillors, and so it is not actually deemed to be a conflict for the DAP member DAP meetings. I have checked with the councillors, and they will take all deputations into consideration and make a decision today based on merit. Now, we're coming to deputations. We also, just in relation to deputations, we have an apology from the first deputy, Dave Kelly. He's unfortunately unable to attend today, and no one's speaking on his behalf. Members, can you also indicate, please, that you received a letter yesterday that was circulated by the DAP Secretariat from young Miss Scarlett Warnock from the primary school. Thank you. So we've all read that deputation as well. Okay, so our first deputation is from Jeremy Warnock, the PNC representative. Please, if you could come to the microphone, you've got 5 minutes. I will be timing you. You'll hear a note. If you are continuing to... All deputations have been read by the panel members, so you should assume that the material is understood. We've all said that we've read it and understood it. So if you're making a deputation, try to keep to time, please, and it's best if you've got new material... commence with that.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Jeremy Warnock, the Eden Hill Primary School's PNC President and leader of our fathering group. This proposed development application presents real risks for the safety and well-being of the children that attend Eden Hill, both now and in the future. The site operated as a petrol station from 1970 to 2003. In 2005, however, the EPA released a set of guidelines, separation distances between industrial and sensitive land use. These guidelines state that the hours of operation require a 200 metre buffer zone. However, in this location, there is zero buffer zone. The school is separated by the site by a wire fence. One of the major emissions from the petrol station is benzene. Benzene is a known carcinogen and particularly harmful to young children as their immune systems are still developing. The World Health Organization actually states that there is no safe level of benzene exposure, and we currently have 9 petrol stations in a 3-kilometre radius. Not one of them is close to another primary school. The above image was taken on a random school day at collection time. Marion Street is filled with cars to the point the cars are now starting to park on the site related to the development application. Marion Street is currently a major access point for school families, parents walking their children, as well as older children walking themselves, and the younger siblings will be walking past the proposed crossovers during main peak times. It will only be a matter of time before a child is hurt should this proposal be approved. The proposal is in direct contrast to the definition of an access road, which, as Main Roads describes, safety aspects over priority of vehicle movement. Marion Street is used exclusively for residents and the school community. The application estimates that there will only be 978 customers per day. However, the local passing traffic estimated in their application of 11,309 cars along Walter Road, it's very possible that those numbers would be far higher than estimated, particularly on cheap fuel days. These risks pose a direct threat to the safety and well-being of the school children as they walk to and from school. Many of these children are getting their first chance of independence. This development poses a real risk, not only to their physical well-being, but also their social development. The World Health Organization states there is no safe level of exposure to benzene. The acute effects are narcosis, headaches, dizziness, drowsiness, confusion, tremors, and loss of consciousness. Prolonged exposure of benzene has well-established links to cancer, in particular childhood leukemia. We also have some representatives from the health department here today. If any of the panel members would like to ask them any questions about the effects of benzene. EPA guidelines states that a petrol station open 24 hours a day requires a 200 metre buffer zone. This development is going to be open 18 hours a day. The operating hours are well outside the classification of a convenience store. It's actually closely more classified to a roadhouse, which requires 200 metres, which cannot be met at this location. Development application provides no explanation as to why the developer is not adhering to the EPA guidelines on sensitive land use. Currently, the school uses the oval for the following activities: athletics, training, sports, carnivals, physical education, before school, recess, lunchtime, after school activities, Christmas concerts, family movie nights, and a daily running club. These activities, many of which are promoting health, healthy living, and an active lifestyle, are put at risk by this proposal. The air quality report provided by ERS does not address the impact of the school, and there is no site-specific report that has been conducted as required by EPA guidelines when the buffer zone cannot be met. There is no consideration in the reports or the original development application of peak times, and these are a known period that can be referenced by the government's own Fuel Watch website. These images illustrate that there is no buffer zone between the school and the site involved. Children can be seen running on the oval as part of the morning run club. PNC are currently looking at ways to improve and expand our nature play exercise equipment around the edge of the oval. Eden Hill Primary School tries very hard every year to promote a safe and healthy environment for our children to attend. However, the proposal puts much of what we try to achieve in danger. Currently, the state is still compensating families for victims of suffering mesothelioma, an incurable illness brought on by inhaling asbestos fibres, a building material that was once deemed safe by the Australian government. It's a basic human right to have clean air. To allow the proposal would be negligent and will risk children's health. The proposal is also in direct contrast to a recent plan that the town of Bassendean have passed to reduce Walter Road East to a single carriageway to increase walking and cycleways whilst beautifying the area. I thank you for your time and hope that you can agree with me that this proposal does not present the best land use for the site, but also brings a threat to the school and the community.
Thank you, Mr. Warnock. Our next presenter is Karina Hackney, please.
Excuse me. Do we do questions after the presentation or right at the end?
No, it's at the end.
Hi, my name is Karina Haley, and I'm a parent of a student at Eden Hill and also a local resident. The proposed petrol station has been opposed on many grounds: health, safety, pedestrian access, traffic, and they're all concerning factors that need to be considered. I would like to talk to you today about the proposed petrol station and the effect it's going to have on the community in Eden Hill and Bassendean in terms of how it negatively affects the environmental direction that Bassendean is heading in as a community, and how it negatively contrasts the aesthetics of the surrounding suburb, and how it negatively impacts the livability of our suburban streets. We do not want a petrol station on our doorsteps. Many people head to Bassendean and the more affordable Eden Hill because we have young families. We want a home in a street with a few trees, a few character houses to give it some quaint ambiance. We want parks to take our families to and to see our friends at. We want cycle paths and pavements to walk our dogs and our children. These may sound like trivial things, but the fact is that we spend time and money saving for and working towards when we're looking for somewhere to live. We want to invest in a home and a community. That's where we're going to spend the rest of our lives. The reason the town of Bassendean is a popular place to live for young people is because we have streets full of old character weatherboard homes, along with an array of other suburban homes and apartments with aesthetic appeal that the community wants to live in. On a more tangible level, We have a community, are moving towards and are paying for a lifestyle that emphasises environmentally friendly transport options. We want a more connected community that walks and rides and quite literally lives on greener streets. Initiatives such as the proposed changes to Walter Road, where it's going to become a single lane road with a beautiful green medium strip, more footpaths and bike paths for their children to be able to ride and walk to school and be shaded by Lutwa trees, and build boost the suburban character of our neighbourhood. The environmental message of Bassendine is further reinforced by the fact that we are one of the first councils to ban on unreusable plastic, and their proposed three bin initiative. We're spending lots of money as ratepayers to plant more trees and have a more environmentally friendly community. The proposed development does not complement the unique character of the local surroundings and could be a potential green light for other uncomplimentary proposals in the future. Arguments for the proposal cite that the surrounding deli and existing streetscape along Walter Road are examples of why it should be okay to erect more large walls with minimal setback, and they've clearly missed the point of the town's objections based on undesirable urban outcomes. Design outcomes, sorry. To give some context, Eden Hill School is over 100 years old, and the resident dwellings that surround the proposed site were mostly built in the 1900s, some of which have been recognised in Town of Bassendean's 2017 Municipal Heritage Inventory as having significant historical and aesthetic and social values of interwar period dwellings. These dwellings are made of timber, weatherboard, and are not sealed as tightly as modern brick homes. They're more prone to vulnerable to noise, light, bad smells and toxic pollutions from nearby sources, such as the proposed petrol station. Despite the site zoning technically requiring the meeting the land use, the site previously being the site of a garage with a single Bowser does not make this a safe or desirable addition to our community. We are still living with the effects of the past service station, groundwater contamination, which is nearly and finally on the mend. Only to have another large petrol station proposed at the same site, it does feel like a bit of a cruel joke. The proposed petrol station, aside from the glaring fact that it's right next door to the school, is slap bang in the middle of our suburban streets, in the middle of the new green accessible development for Walter Road. It negatively contrasts the local environment, which in turn negatively affects our community. Let's put petrol stations and other large commercial and industrial areas, not on our suburban streets.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Jeremy Fischdinger. I hope I pronounced that vaguely correctly.
Good morning. My name is Jeremy Fischdinger. I act on behalf of the local residents and community opposed to the proposed service station. I disclose to the panel that I own and reside a dwelling adjacent to the proposed petrol station with my wife, my 3-year-old son, and 6-month-old daughter. We, along with our neighbours and the school children at Eden Hill Primary, represent what is referred to in your documentation as sensitive receptors, defined as living things that can be adversely impacted by exposure to pollution and contamination. Although significant amounts of valid information is being presented in opposition to the development, I would like to focus in on two areas that directly impact the residents within the immediate facility and adjacent to the proposed development. These being noise pollution and the impact of lighting associated with the proposal, including that of traffic rerouted from the normal flow of traffic. Firstly, noise. To date, there's been no acoustic assessment. The proposal does not treat this with the seriousness which the residents deserve, stating that noise impacts associated with the proposed development would be minimal and can simply be addressed through an environmental acoustic assessment. This can be prepared as a condition of development approval in accordance with Environmental Protection Noise Regulations 1997. This comment is generic, it's non-site specific, and a report should be supplied up front, not as a condition of approval. It should take into consideration the unique locational circumstances, including the extreme close proximity to residential dwellings, the age and material of those dwellings, the out-of-business hour noise impacts of mechanical equipment, such as refrigeration units that run 24/7, as well as the day-to-day impact of a business that promotes itself as a low-cost supplier attracting high levels of activity to the local surrounds. The applicant comments in lieu of an acoustic report that Importantly, the subject site does not share a common boundary with noise-sensitive land use. The impact of noise emanating from the subject site is buffered by the Marion Street and Walter Road reservations, and that the area is characterised by a high level of background traffic noise. This would imply that there's no additional impact in addition to what's already deemed satisfactory traffic noise. Any additions to the existing noise levels are unwelcome, unnecessary, and unsatisfactory. Additional noise should be deemed as the opposite of what the local area should be striving for. Efforts should be made to decrease noise in the area, not increase or add to them. Secondly, light pollution. The way traffic is funneled into the proposed site along Marion Street and exited to Walter Road East will immediately impact the residents during evening and early morning operation, even more so in the winter months. The lighting from the convenience store, security lighting and fuel price signage will create significant light pollution which is not addressed with any regard to the residents' concerns or the types of dwellings surrounding the roadhouse. It's unfortunate that the residents at 1 Marion Street, who will have the lighting from traffic intruding directly into their bedroom from a mere 15 metres outside their bedroom window. Adjacent residents along Walter Road East will face similar issues from the entry and exit of vehicles, albeit not as intense as 1 Marion Street, still enough to disrupt and decrease our standard of living. The lighting will have additional potential to distract eastbound drivers from the traffic lights at the corner of Ivanhoe and Walter Road East, which is already widely known to the local community as a black spot intersection. Given the close proximity to the school and the amount of children in the area, we deem this as an unsafe and unnecessary risk to the community. Those of us that live and work or attend school within the EPA's guideline of buffer zone, we're not prepared to have our standard of living lowered or become a statistic for future studies on the impact of petrol station pollution. If there's even the smallest risk of harm to a child or community members' health and well-being, we ask respectfully that this proposal be rejected. We kindly request that the applicant finds a more suitable area away from young families and school children, and that the land at this site be rezoned to suit a modern-day forward-thinking society. For our six-month-old daughter, whose bedroom is only metres away and well within the EPA's buffer guideline, the disruption and potential for health issues is not acceptable to us. She deserves better. Finally, I'd like to thank everyone who's taken time away from their families and paid work to oppose this unhealthy proposal.
Thank you. Our next presenter is Dr. Alexander Lane.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. As a disclosure, I have a daughter who attends Eden Hill Primary School, and I'm also a resident of the area. And I'm speaking on behalf of myself. And also, I have a little bit of history in this area. I'm the head of respiratory environmental health at the Telethon Kids Institute. I've been working there for almost 15 years, researching the health effects of environmental exposures that go along with this sort of thing. And I'm also an associate professor in the School of Public Health at Curtin University. So it's clear there's a lot of international evidence that suggests that there's health effects associated with living near, working near, going to school near petrol stations. No one can refute that. Although the risk is small, there is an increased risk of childhood leukemia associated with proximity to or density of petrol stations in a given area. And although the studies are limited, they're usually about areas where there's greater density of petrol stations, there is a slight increased risk of these childhood diseases. As we've already heard today, there's a range of toxins associated with petrol stations, including VOCs, volatile organic compounds, such as benzene, which we've heard about, other ones like toluene, and exhaust fumes as well, so particulate matter, oxides of nitrogen, and that sort of thing, all of which are known to be damaging to health. Particularly benzene and diesel exhaust particles are classified as group 1 carcinogens, so that is known to cause cancer in humans, and that's by the International Agency on Cancer. In relation to a petrol station, there's been recent technological advances which have contributed to a decrease in the chance of exposure from benzene and other chemicals if you live or work nearby. This is things like VR1 and VR2 systems, so vapor recovery systems, which suggest that these things actually reduce a bit of the exposure. However, up-to-date international research shows that the World Health Organization, WHO, annual limit of 5 micrograms per metre cubed, in Australia that's 10 micrograms per metre cubed, is still often exceeded near petrol stations, and there's a huge amount of international literature which shows this is the case. Further, in Western Australia, there's no legislative requirement for VO2 recovery systems, which are mentioned in the report. However, the applicant has not provided any assurance that this will be in place, and it will be very unusual for Western Australia if it is put in place. Importantly, international agencies, again, such as the WHO, agree that there is no evidence for a no observable effect exposure level for benzene. Now, what does this mean? Basically, there is no level of benzene exposure which is safe. So even if it's the tiniest little amount as proposed in one of the modelling reports, there is still an increased risk of health effects. There is still a danger. It doesn't matter how much you're exposed to, even if it's a small, tiny amount. So the health risks associated with living, working, attending school near petrol stations are potentially more severe in susceptible populations, and we've already heard what a susceptible population is, so particularly children, but also the elderly, people with existing respiratory conditions or other diseases. And as a result, the WAEPA classifies schools as a sensitive land use area. We've already heard about that as well. And in their guidelines, they state that a minimum of at least 50 metres above buffer zone is required, anywhere between 50 and 200, depending on how you classify this area. Obviously, there's no buffer zone between the school and the proposed petrol station, with the fence directly between them. So the bottom lines in terms of the health potential health effects is that allowing the proposal to proceed will mean that the children and residents in the nearby area will be exposed to increased levels of toxins associated with petrol stations. There is no getting around it, they will be. It doesn't matter how good the vapor recovery systems are, which way the wind's blowing, whatever, there will be an increase in toxins. While the additional level of exposure is likely to be small, in the absence of reliable modelling data, and we're going to hear a little bit about that later, local real-world measurements, international evidence supports the requirement for a buffer zone. We suggest 50 to 200 metres between schools and petrol stations. And as there is no possibility of a buffer zone, is my recommendation that the proposal not be approved. Thank you.
Thank you. As a mathematic, I'm not sure that I want to fill my car up anymore. Now, our next presenter was with Digby Adams and Christina Carey, but Digby Adams is no longer available, so Christina, please.
My name is Christina Carey. I'm a local resident and I'm presenting on behalf of other concerned community members. There is significant concern regarding the reliance on Marion Street for access to and egress from the property, associated volumes of traffic that will be generated, and the implications of this on vehicle, cyclist and pedestrian safety. As Jeremy mentioned, Marion Street is classified as an access road, the intent of which is to provide access to abutting properties with amenity, safety and aesthetic aspects having priority over vehicle movement function. Marion Street not only provides access to adjoining properties, but also plays a key role in regard to the adjacent Edenhill Primary School. The street provides an important cycling and pedestrian route, as well as marked parking bays which are utilised by the school. The western side of Marion Street is in fact marked as no stopping to reduce congestion on this already busy street. Adding to this, on or near the corner of Marion Street and Walter Road, there are numerous utility access points. When these services are accessed, it is necessary for utility vehicles to park on Marion Street either partially or fully blocking the lane. There are Water Corporation, Western Power, Telstra and NBN access points in this location. And we've got photos here which show when these are accessed, how the street is blocked off. The application includes the installation of a median island on Walter Road. This would restrict access to the Walter Road crossover to vehicles travelling in an easterly direction. all westbound traffic would need to enter and exit via Marion Street, along with all fuel tankers and service vehicles. Conservatively, it could be assumed that these vehicle movements would represent at least 50% of predicted traffic, or 489 vehicles per day accessing Marion Street. If these were all additional vehicles, this would represent a 152% increase in traffic on Marion Street. Given the utility access requirements as outlined and the use of Marion Street for vehicles, cyclists and pedestrian access to the school and nearby properties, this magnitude increase in traffic will compromise safety. In particular, there is significant concern around AM and PM peaks in vehicles accessing the property, particularly on Mondays when queues at petrol stations are commonplace. These peaks will overlap with school drop-off and pick-up times, adding to congestion and safety issues. Given the constraints on Marion Street, with the western side marked as no stopping, vehicles would need to queue on Malta Road, posing a significant safety hazard. Further to this, the Town of Bassendean recommends that all vehicle movements should be restricted to in via Marion Street and out via Walter Road. Should all 978 estimated vehicles per day access Marion Street, this would represent a 304% increase in traffic on the street, further compromising vehicle, cyclist, pedestrian safety and exacerbating the issue of queuing with only one access point at which to do so. Under this scenario, all vehicles would have to exit eastbound on Walter Road, forcing westbound vehicles to undertake a U-turn or other manoeuvre further down Walter Road, leading to additional safety issues. On a separate but related note, it is believed that the intent of the zoning of the two adjacent lots as local shopping implies a degree of connectivity between the properties. However, the orientation of this development towards Marion Street with its back to the existing property doesn't allow any connection. This intended connection between the two adjacent lots is evidenced by the existence of matching right of carriageway easements on both properties. The intent of such easements is that each respective owner grants to the grantee full and free right and liberty to go, pass and repass at all times, either with or without vehicles of any description, laden or unladen, across the boundary. Whilst the easement has been kept clearly under this development, this intent isn't honoured, as it would be impossible for a vehicle to move across the boundary between the two properties. In regard to incompatibility of the development with its setting, it is highly unsuitable that the development fronts Marion Street and Access Road. In contrast to residential dwellings that front this street, the height, scale and bulk of the development is completely out of proportion and dwarfs the residential properties. In a review of 20 nearby petrol stations, not a single other petrol station fronted an access road. Thank you.
Thank you. The next presenter is Benham Boardman, please.
Madam Presiding Member, panel members, officers, good morning and thank you for the opportunity. My name is Benham Boardwar. I have provided two submissions to JDAP, one for the purpose of the original JDAP meeting, dated 25th of October, and the second dated 23rd of November. I assume that the panel members have had the opportunity to read those documents. So I don't intend to go over the content of those documents. However, I want to provide some additional information with respect to references which is made in the RAR to Australian Standard 2890.1. These references are made with respect to dimensions of the parking bays in front of the convenience store and with respect to the spacing available between the bowsers. The dimensions which are used in the RAR are relevant to user class 3 and 3A in the AS2890.1. Those user classes are for town centers and shopping centers. Clearly, we are neither. Secondly, the extra width of the bays recommended by the Australian standard with respect to those user classes are relevant to the fact that often people who are at shopping centers or in the town center environments have trolleys or shopping bags, etc. So therefore they need a little bit extra space to get in and out of their cars. That won't be the case in this case. So in our view, the use of AS2890 user class 3 and 3A to a services station is inappropriate, and I've provided enough information why such a reference to the spacing between the bowsers is also inappropriate. So that's all the additional information that I wanted to provide the panel members. So I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you. We'll go through all of the presentations. We may come back to you for some questions.
Thank you.
Damon Lottis, please.
Good morning, everybody. I'm here to talk this morning about an overview of the air quality assessment that was completed as part of this application. Conscious I've only got 5 minutes, so I have 10 slides to go through. I would be more than happy to talk about this for some significant time, but maybe we'll leave that for questions. So just in terms of what I'm going to talk about, just give you an overview of VR1 and VR2 vapor recovery systems, an overview of the assessment approach, the results, and a brief conclusion. It's important to understand VR1 and VR2. These are emission control technologies. VR1, which you'll see here, is a standard practice across metropolitan regions across Australia. Essentially, what happens is when you have bulk loading, unloading of liquids, so when we have the delivery truck that brings in petrol and diesel, that goes into an underground tank. Now, the underground tank that's previously been empty has vapor inside of it, so that has to go somewhere. It's displaced. In the old days, it just went straight to atmosphere. But what we have here in this system is an interlock whereby that vapor is fed back into the truck. It's captured. And that then goes back to the depot. VR2, as been pointed out earlier, is fairly unique, certainly in Perth Metro. It's mandated on some of the East Coast cities. Interestingly, it's mandated not for exposure purposes. It's actually mandated for photochemical smog precursors. So it's the reason it's there is not about exposure when you're filling up your pump or if you're living next to a petrol station. It's there for other reasons. Just pointing out, the proponent has committed to this technology, so to be explicit, it is a commitment. So what happens here, it's essentially the same as VR1, but in micro. So this time we have the empty petrol tank. The fumes inside the empty petrol tank need to go somewhere. As you're filling up, they are actually extracted back out and go back into the tank at the bottom. So there's a cowl that just sucks those fumes out around the nozzle of the petrol pump. So the model approach, I'm not going to go into this in detail. I'm not expecting anyone to read that, but really it's suffice to say this is a complex process. There have been lots of inputs that have been provided into that model, and the intent of doing that is to make it as accurate as possible. So local meteorology, estimates of emissions, including importantly modulation for those emissions at peak times, that has all been accounted for. So here's an overview of what's gone into the model. So we have the vent, which is called P1. So this is the vent from the tank below. Importantly, that is only released for emergency purposes. So ordinarily, as we say, during the VR1 process, all emissions are captured. But in the event that we have overpressure in the tank underneath, there is a small release that might happen in emergency situation. So very hot weather where you have build-up pressure in the tank. The other one there that we've simulated is beneath the canopy. So what happens there, we call it the whoosh, and you all know what the whoosh is when you open your petrol tank and the vapors come out when you have an empty tank before you fill up. You can't capture that. That's a fugitive emission. It's a minor one, but it's there. And also accounts for any spills as you take the actual nozzle and put it into your car. You might get a few drips on the floor. Those are then evaporated. Again, minor emissions, but we have accounted for those in our modelling. So just here, a couple of slides on meteorology. There was some feedback on our original report that maybe we hadn't gotten the meteorology right. We've done our homework, I can assure you of that. We've looked at many years of meteorological observations, both at Perth Metro and Perth Airport. We have assimilated those into 8,760 individual hourly observations. They've all gone into the model, and we've looked at the variability across years and the variability across seasons. It's all there in the report and the subsequent addendum that I've provided just for clarification. We've also looked at background air quality. This is an important point. There's no actual measurements for background benzene, ethyl benzene, xylene within Perth Metro, even historical. And I would politely suggest that maybe the reason for that is it's a function of priority and how important an air quality impact that is regarded. So whereas we have monitoring continuously for oxides of nitrogen, particulate matter, other factors, you actually can't source data for roadside BTEX, so benzene, toluene, ethyl, benzene, xylene, in Perth Metro. We've sourced data from the East Coast where there's been some observations made adjacent to roadways, adjacent to freeway projects, and we've accounted for those background concentrations as well in the addendum report. And it's fair to say that these are extremely low concentrations. Moving on to the model results, again, I don't expect anyone to read that from here. So the key number there is 10, which is the criterion. One of the earlier speakers mentioned a criterion of 5, so let's go with that. The 5 criterion, the smallest number that you can see on that graph, and these are concentric lines of exposure from the petrol station. The largest number in there is 0.2, and that's very close in to where the petrol station is. So if we're using 5 as a criterion compared to a 0.2, we're talking about 25 times below the health-related criterion for an annual average exposure to benzene. Another short-term exposure to benzene, and benzene is the limiting pollutant here. The short-term exposure, again, the criterion is 53. The largest number on that figure is 20. So that is 2.5 times below the criterion. But that is for the maximum 3-minute average experienced over an entire year. So for the peak emission, under peak worst-case meteorology, you will be 2.5 times below a health-based criterion based on a 3-minute average. So, getting to the conclusions, essentially we've done an extremely comprehensive assessment of air quality, and it's site-specific, and typically it's worth saying we wouldn't do such an assessment. There's been a lot of talk about 200-metre buffer, and that being a guideline. That is a guideline, so typically when you have a guideline rather than a mandated rule, if you like, you will do additional investigations to evaluate whether that guideline is applicable or whether it can be tailored for site-specific. So the modelling has been done with that end and to evaluate whether we're talking about any significant health impacts. The conclusion is, essentially, we're not. We've compared it to national criteria, to Victorian criteria, to New South Wales criteria, and we are well below under maximum and conservative assumptions. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Josh Watson, please.
Thank you and good morning. I'm Josh Watson, Senior Planner at Planning Solutions, and I act on behalf of VIVE in support of the proposed convenience store in Eden Hill. My presentation will address the planning framework, EPA separation distances and the development standards that have underpinned the Office's recommendation for refusal. Many of the considerations are perceived impacts, which I'd like to clarify for the members today, and matters that can simply be addressed by way of condition of development approval. So the subject site is owned local shopping under the town's local planning scheme 10. This is not a residential zone property reserve site, it is a commercially zoned property. The subject site also fronts Walter Road East, which is reserved as another regional roads under the Metropolitan Region scheme. In terms of road hierarchy, this is the second highest category of road within the Perth Metropolitan Region. This road is of regional significance and is a road where these types of uses are generally located next to. Proposed VIVE is classified as a convenience store in accordance with LPS 10. A convenience store is a permitted use within the local shopping zone. In zoning the land, both the local government, WA Planning Commission and the Minister expressively support and permit a convenience store within this zone, and in turn as a use on this site. To put this site in a bit of context, as you're aware and outlined in the officer report and by previous deputations, the site contained a service station historically for almost 50 years. This site is not foreign to contain this type of use and development. And the main consideration that has informed the reason for refusal rates to the EPA separation distances, which states a 50 metre separation for service stations and sensitive land uses. The matters that are to be considered for service station developments relate to gas, odour, risk and noise. I'll cover off on each of these. As Damon demonstrated in his presentation, the vapour analysis is well below the standards to confirm gas and odour is satisfactory. In relation to risk, this is best dealt with at the dangerous goods licence process. The State Administrative Tribunal considered this exact matter in the case of Puma Energy Australia in the City of Cobourne in 2016, where it was outlined a risk assessment is required to document how the facility will operate with minimal risk to people, property and the environment. This risk assessment accompanies any dangerous goods licence application. These sites need to be designed to ensure they can obtain a dangerous goods licence, otherwise there is no point even obtaining a development approval if the licence cannot be obtained. Noise is the last factor for consideration. We'd be pleased to provide environmental noise assessment as a condition of approval to demonstrate the noise associated with the proposed development and is compliant with the noise regulations. We are confident we can achieve this and we would be happy to provide this as a condition of approval. Taking on board these components, it's clear the EPA separation distance considerations have all been considered and warrant a variation to the generic 50 metre buffer distance. I'd now like to provide the panel with some examples of how the use is often located next to sensitive land uses. Modern day service stations are equipped with state-of-the-art infrastructure, as outlined by Damon, recovery systems that also incorporate tanks that are double-walled and monitored, also have state-of-the-art stormwater. So these facilities are state-of-the-art. The example put in front of you here is the 7-Eleven in Caulfield Street in Gosnells, which recently opened and is located next to Seaford Primary School. No site-specific assessment was actually required for this site, with only one objection from a neighbouring commercial landowner. There was no objections from the Department of Education, school or surrounding landowners. This site is also adjacent next to a wetland, which is on the bottom right corner there. This further illustrates the infrastructure provided within these sites is state-of-the-art and safe. Here you can see the Coles Express Myra. This site is also located next to a Catholic primary school. And here you can see the Puma and Hamilton Hill. This site is located directly adjacent to residential properties and is the site referred to in my presentation summary and that case that went to the State Administrative Tribunal in 2016, where the EPA separation distance were considered at length. In conclusion, the proposed development warrants approval. The proposed use is a P use within the local shopping zone. The proposed use is, and development is appropriately located next to another regional road, being Walter Road East. The proposal has demonstrated a variation to the 50 metre separation distance is appropriate in this context, and the various reasons for refusal can simply be addressed by way of conditions of development approval. The panel would have also received my presentation summary with comments on the reasons for refusal and the recommended without prejudice conditions prepared by the town. I respectfully request that JDAP approve the proposed development subject to the modified conditions outlined in my presentation summary. I'll be pleased to answer any questions.
Thank you, Josh. We now have John Hurley on behalf of the town of Bassendean from Palace.
John Hurley of Talis Consultants, presenting on behalf of the town of Bassendean. My role was to peer review the ARM report and determine if the findings of the report were consistent with the methods used in Western Australia to determine the risk of air quality impacts from service station activities. I have a point of clarification. My original JDAP submission, I made the statement that dispersion modelling for assessing vapour losses and therefore determining the risk of impacts was inadequate. This statement can be misleading and requires some clarification, and my apologies for this. What I was referring to is that the use of dispersion modelling for near-field impacts of amenity is inadequate in my view, given how close the nearest receptor is to the proposed service station, which is within tens of metres. I found in my review that the effects on amenity from the proposed service station were not adequately addressed and did not include an assessment of odour impacts from the service station. Further to this, the modelling undertaken for the quantitative impacts of air toxics and the subsequent report lacked detail with regard to meteorological trends in the locale or a more robust discussion of these trends, which would have allowed a clearer understanding of the potential for impacts on the adjacent school oval. Despite this, the technical setup of the air toxics modelling itself appears in principle to be consistent with the general methods for undertaking this type of modelling. However, specific details around the development of the modelled emission rates, including conservatism of those emission rates, was not presented. I also note that the volumes of fuel dispensed daily was estimated at 5,000 litres of unleaded and 4,000 litres of diesel daily. If we assume that a car holds 40 litres, then there are 125 unleaded petrol cars daily and potentially 50 diesel cars, depending on the size of the tanks in the car. This would equal 175 cars a day for a 6-bowser operation. This number of cars daily averages out to be less than 10 cars per hour based on the operating times, which appears to be low for a 6-bowser design and may understate the emissions and subsequent impacts. Additionally, the throughput does not appear to represent peak daily times that consider traffic flows and fuel cycles, and would therefore not represent peak impact periods typically experienced in the early mornings and the late evenings. With this, the modelling may not represent actual toxic emissions. It should be noted that the service station cannot satisfy a minimum separation distance being either 50 or 200 metres, the latter of which is more applicable for this proposal. I note that the site representative modelling attempts to define an air toxics impact contour or minimum separation distance, which in this case they found to be less than 50 metres or negligible. However, within such a close distance between the nearest receptor and the emission source, in my view, the modelling of air toxics can't be considered a suitable surrogate with which to assess amenity such as odour. In lieu of dispersion modelling for odour, which was not undertaken, a site representative odour assessment could have been undertaken by assessing odour impacts in the near field from surrogate service stations operating in the same or similar way to further inform the risk. This would inform the assessment of the potential for amenity impacts off-site and would further support the inclusion of VR2 vapour recovery, which was not made in the original submission. I note VR1 is mandatory in Western Australia, VR2 is not. The ARM report assumes VR2, however, as I said, VR2 was not included in the original lodgement as advice provided by the town of Bassendean. If VR2 is included, then the potential for air toxic impacts is mitigated to a higher level. That is, the risk of toxic impacts is expected to be low. Once again, in my opinion, the close proximity of receptors cannot be adequately assessed for odour and amenity impacts based only on the modelling of air toxics. Other assessments of amenity impacts would also appear to be missing, as discussed, including noise and ambient lighting, which would be further useful in informing the level of risk. Land zoning appears to be appropriate. However, there are a number of factors that need to be considered in determining land use conflicts and separation distances, in particular that the separation distance cannot be met at any level. The operational hours of the service station reflect a separation distance greater than 50 metres and up to 200 metres. Another consideration for a land use conflict may also be the obvious aesthetic appeal of having a service station located so close to school grounds and bordered by residential housing. And on the basis of the air toxics modelling undertaken, those areas where more information would have further informed the risk and the lack of consideration of local amenity impacts, such as odour, I can't support the application based only on the ARM report. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, final deputations from Rodney Ding on behalf of the town of Bassendean, GTA.
I'm here this morning on behalf of the town of Bassendean just to address and reinforce the following engineering issues that we've identified in the RIR. Firstly, referring to section 3 of the engineering comments in the RIR, the design for a 19 metre long pectoral semi-trailer will give the site the most flexibility when it comes to fuel deliveries. This will allow the supplier to serve not only this site but also other sites in a single trip. In discussion with the local fuel distributor, they've advised that they mostly use semi-trailers for metropolitan service station fuel deliveries. Glasses on. There we go. Referring to these figures, considering that a full-size semi-trailer will not be able to access the site without requiring significant modifications to the road, and that's on Marion Street. Even if the smaller 15-metre semi-trailer or the 12.5-metre rigid truck were to be utilised, there would be safety impacts, as vehicles would not be able to safely clear the footpath on the corner of the intersection. And this is the proponent's swept pass. Difficult to see, but it's on the corner that the impacts are. This is critical, as children from Eden Hill Primary School, which borders this lot, use this footpath, as will people walking to and from this development and to and from shops south of Walter Road. Next is section 4 of the RIR. Recent work undertaken by GTA for the town of Bassendean suggests that a 10-metre long garbage truck should be the size of vehicle used to assess the swept paths for garbage collection within the town. This size vehicle typically has a rear lift for the bins. As can be seen, a vehicle of this size would find it very difficult to enter the site in forward gear and then reverse into the loading bay. This manoeuvre is even worse for single unit trucks, which some companies use to deliver goods for businesses. They would find this reversing movement into the loading bay most likely impossible if cars are parked in the parking bays near the loading zone, so adjacent to the loading zone. The Australian standard calls for loading bays to be designed for the largest vehicle expected to use it. It should be designed also to design where possible so that when reversing, the driver is on the inside of the turn so that they have a clear view of the loading bay they are reversing into. In this situation, the driver will be on the outside and will not have a clear view of the bay as they reverse into, which is dangerous considering the likely location of parked cars adjacent to the loading zone. Next is section 5 of the RIR. The proposed 15-metre semi-trailer will not be able to access the site if there are any cars stopped at the Marion Street stop sign. Something that drivers may or may not be aware when attempting to enter the site. The semi-trailer will have to stop on Walter Road East and wait until the car exits Marion Street. This manoeuvre would be dangerous as the semi-trailer stopped on Walter Road East will block sight lines and could lead to right angle and rear end crashes on Walter Road. A good practice in these instances is to design for the access for that size vehicle and not to rely solely on the road traffic code regulations to allow such access. And also livable neighbourhoods typically wouldn't be applicable in this case because that's only applicable for structure plan subdivisions and in this instance. Next is slide 12. Even without semi-trailer movement, the right turn from Marion Street has a substandard site distance towards the west. In this case, a site distance of about 55 metres is available, whereas 123 metres should be provided. The effects of this were noticeable on site as drivers turning right from Marion Street edged their car forward and took long periods to turn right as they tried to pick safe gaps in the traffic. Additional traffic from the development and service station will only exacerbate this. Next item, section 6 of the RAR. With possession of fuel pumps, there's no provision for cars to circulate past cars stopped at the bowsers if all bowsers are utilised. This circulation area would be required to allow cars to access the convenience store when accessing the site from Marion Street or to exit the site to the west via Marion Street. Under busy flows on low-priced fuel days, when most of the pumps would be full, there'll be cars stopped within the site and the lack of circulation space will severely impact good orderly traffic flow through and around the site and may lead to queues back onto Walter Road. Section 8 of the RAR now. This is dealing with the distances between fuel pumps. There's no standard distance for distances between fuel pumps, but typically service stations have a 6.5 to 7 metre distance. This allows for a 2.56 metre width for a car to park, and that is a standard Class 3 bay width. That's caters for short-term, high-turnover parking activities, which fuel bowser use would be, plus a 0.6 metre. On top of that, it's a 0.6 metre distance for a driver to stand adjacent to the car. A 5.5 metre distance proposed in this design will not allow space for a driver to refuel adjacent to a car. Next is section 9, which is referring back to the loading bay again. 3-metre loading bay is insufficiently wide to allow a 2.5-metre truck with 0.5-metre clearances on each side as required under the Australian standards to reverse into. Trucks which are able to manoeuvre into the space would not allow the driver to exit, let alone able to unload. The bay should be at least 3.5 metres wide to allow a clear area adjacent to this for goods to be unloaded from the vehicle. And finally, in section 7, the revised location of the air and water location on the southwest corner, again allowing for a 2.6 metre wide bay for a car to park, and that allows for cars to mispark, and allowing for a 0.6 metre service area or surface zone around that for a person to move around that vehicle, that would severely impact on the access to and from the fuel pump nearest to Walter Road. And the final item, I think it's been covered off already, and with an agreement that there's a 4.5 metre height clearance under the canopy is required under the Australian standards, and that needs to be attained if a semi-trailer size vehicle similar is utilised. And that's it.
Thank you. That concludes deputations. I'll go to questions from the panel. We have obviously the consultants on behalf of the town here and also the applicant and consultant team for the applicant. Do you have any questions? Catherine.
Planning solutions, gentlemen. I note the images that you sent through, I think it was yesterday that I received them, that show primarily they were sent through to describe separation distances to sensitive land uses. But I also did note that the roads surrounding those particular petrol stations that were used as examples do not have a similar layout to what we have here in Bassendean, in that Marion Street is quite a small side road, and all of those images that you sent as an example actually are petrol stations that have quite good access and they're also larger sites that have free movement of traffic. So I find it interesting, and my question is, would you not perceive that the small nature of the site and the narrowness of the side road could conceivably cause queuing for cars and could create a host of potential issues in respect to this site?
So I suppose there's a couple of pillars to that question. I think, first off, the Marion Street is a local road, and the site is located on the corner, so we do have the ability to access from both roads. And the layout of the site, it does allow for cars to be parked next to the bowsers, as well as have cars queued behind those. That is satisfactory, and Benham might be able to provide some further input on the traffic component to that in terms of the queuing and the location of the crossover.
Can I just supplementary question to that? Do you have any other comparisons where a petrol station exists with such a small side street as the main access point?
It may be better for Benham to answer this. Josh, by all means, if you had some examples.
I've probably been involved in about 150 service station developments throughout Perth and Australia, and there's a number of examples. They're not coming to me, but these sites are commonly located on side roads with major frontages to, like Walter Road, and it's not uncommon, and we do see it quite regularly. So.
Similar to Josh, we've been involved with hundreds of service station applications. There are many examples that I won't recall the name of the side roads, but on Albany Highway, on Great Eastern Highway, on Oran Road, where the service station was located on the corner, where the side road is a minor access road. I just wanted to make a comment about the issue of potential queuing. Mm-hmm. The queuing that occurs with school traffic is significantly more than a service station. So that queuing is presuming occurring today, is associated with school traffic. No one seems to be having an issue with it. But potential queuing associated with the service station is identified as an issue. So I just wanted to make that point.
Can I just ask a supplementary question to that then? You have a school and a fuel station, so you would have compound queuing, if you like. Would that not be an issue then?
No, because if you look at the pattern of traffic that is associated with the service station, is that the vast majority of the traffic is passing trade. So that's traffic which is already on Walter Road East. So that traffic either would turn into Marion and then turn into the service station and then exit back onto Walter Road, or they may come in from the Walter Road crossover and just turn left and exit. So my view is that the vast majority of that passing traffic would probably access the site by first turning left into Marion, then into the service station and exit back. So that pattern of traffic does not really conflict with the school traffic. And also there is a peak time operational issues, that the afternoon peak of the service station occurs after the school peak time. So when the school is finished and everybody is gone, the morning peak of the service station is normally during the 7 to 8 a.m. hours, but there is a little bit of overlap with the school traffic. So what will happen with school traffic? They presumably turn left from Waterloo Road East into Marion and go to school. And similarly, the traffic from service station turn left and then into the service station, and then they exit directly onto Walter Road.
Mm.
Catherine, I'll start with you.
Can I just follow up on that? You've indicated that the peak afternoon period does not coincide with the school time. However, I read in one of the reports that the peak sales time was between 3 and 4. So how does that mean that the peak traffic time is different?
I'm not sure about that particular information, but the peak sales time is probably recorded from some other service station, because obviously this service station is not operating at the moment, so we don't know what the sales peak time is going to be. But from a traffic operational point of view, normally, because service stations rely heavily on passing traffic, the peak operating time is related to the peak hour of the traffic on the frontage road. And in the afternoon, that doesn't occur during that time.
So would you then concur that perhaps local site-specific studies should have been undertaken and submitted with this application rather than desktop studies?
Well, we've looked at the traffic locally. So we've looked at the pattern of the local traffic and the times for the peak of the local traffic. So from a traffic point of view, we have undertaken standard type of local studies that is undertaken for this type of development.
Any questions, Catherine?
Sorry. Yes.
I think
I'll come back to that one in a minute.
Any other questions?
Yeah. Yes. Got a question. I've made a note in my question of the appropriate paperwork, because we've received lots of documents over the period of time. So your submission dated the 23rd of November. The attachment 4 that was attached to that. Would you like me to wait until you drill the documentation? So the 23rd of November submission attachment 4.
Please continue.
Oh, it's okay, I'm happy to...
That's okay, I'll probably know what it is, so please continue.
Okay, so on the diagrams there, it shows that a car would be approximately 150 millimetres away from the bollard associated with the Bowser. Okay, so... I'm trying to imagine a person operating and functioning in that space, and you might have noticed I'm a fairly large human being, and I'm struggling to understand how 150 millimetres would provide adequate space for functional use. So I'm just wondering if you can provide some reflection on whether you think it's practical to have 150 millimetres.
Yeah, well, two elements of response to your question. First, the vehicle size which was used to draw that diagram is what is called the B99 vehicle. That vehicle is 5.2 meters long and nearly 2 meters wide. There are no normally purchased manufactured vehicle for that size. That size vehicle is probably a big Rolls Royce or a vehicle like that. So common vehicles are much, much smaller than that size. That's the first one. The second point is that you don't need to maneuver between the space between the car and the bollard. The space that you as a driver should be concerned about is when you open your door and you want to get out of the car and get to the fueling point in front of the bowser. So the space between the bollard, which is there to protect cars hitting the bowser in a forward motion, is not really a relevant consideration in terms of movement of a driver of a vehicle when you are out of the car.
Okay. So you won't be providing, say, window washing facilities at this petrol station then?
Yes, well, why is that relevant? Yeah.
So I'll just take you to the curb lines there. So where the air and water bay is located.
Well, it's not located there. What has been raised, the issues has been raised in terms of the width of the parking bays. What we say is that width is inappropriate for service station. However, what we've suggested that if the panel deems appropriate that size parking bay should be provided, we've recommended the potential new location for the air and water. So currently, air and water is not proposed in that location. It's next to the parking bays.
But it would still only provide 100 mils from the curb line, though, as you propose in your application.
Well, it depends where the car is parked and the size of the car. There are so many variations that dictates what that separation is.
But do you think that 100 mils from the curb line is an adequate?
I have no problem with that. I can quite adequately get to the tie if I have to adjust the pressure.
In 10 centimetres?
Yeah.
Are you a contortionist?
No, I'm a normal human being.
Yes, Catherine. May I follow up there? You've indicated that there's a variation in vehicles. Surely these spaces should accommodate the maximum anticipated vehicle size, which obviously is not the case in the application.
No, that's incorrect. This template is provided to demonstrate that there is adequate space available. As I mentioned in my submission, the width of a Toyota Land Cruiser is 10 centimeter less than this width. So what is another bigger vehicle on the market which potentially may use this service station, which is bigger than a Toyota Land Cruiser?
We're not getting into a debate.
No,
suspect if you've got a Land Cruiser, you wouldn't use this fuel station.
So, in this gentleman's submission, he mentioned the reference that was made to the WAPC's Livable Neighbourhoods Policy document. And I had the same thought too. The Livable Neighbourhoods applies to structure plans and subdivisions in new urban areas, so I was just wondering what the relevance was in this situation.
Well, principle point is the same. The Livable Neighbourhood is saying that when you're turning from a high order road into a low order road, you can use the full width of the pavement by larger size vehicle. That's a well known and accepted principle. You don't design your side roads for your rubbish trucks, do you? When your rubbish trucks turn into that road, they can't turn lane correctly. So it's permitted for those vehicles to use the full pavement width. So it's legally permitted, and relevant documents mention it, that it's okay for that to occur. So, and it does occur every day.
So in the slideshow presentation that accompanied Ms. Carey's reputation, did you see the photo of the service vehicles that were parked on that side road that were accessing the various utilities?
Right.
Do you recall that? Or?
Right.
Yep. So in the modelling and the assessment that you've done around delivery times, have you taken into account the access of those various utilities and the fact that you will have utility service vehicles parked on the road, which would then prevent the turning circle that you're describing?
Well, that happens on every single road, every single intersection.
So my question specifically was, have you taken that into account?
That's not normal practice, you don't.
You haven't, okay.
Yes.
So also in one of the presentations, it was indicated that if vehicles are exiting Marion Street at the stop sign, that service vehicles would have to wait for that vehicle to make an exit before they could turn into Marion Street. Now, this brings me back to the issue of queuing, because conceivably, apart from the dangers of the vehicle at the stop sign having limited sight line to oncoming traffic, it brings me back to queuing. Obviously, there would be queuing behind stationary vehicles on Water Road. So how do you perceive that as affecting noise, extra pollution with cars running? Do you perceive any issues with that at all?
Well, let's put that question in context. First of all, with due respect, I don't think our submissions have been read in detail and understood. What we say is that we have acknowledged that if a tanker is turning right, is clipping the corner of the stop sign, and we have provided a very simple solution by adjusting the curbing of that intersection to address that question. So if that issue seems to be a problem, that simply can be addressed by adjusting the corner curb. So one way or another, it's either an issue or it's not an issue. If it's an issue, that issue can be addressed quite simply.
Even
so
when
I don't accept
stationary
that.
Stationary at the stop sign.
I'm sorry?
Even when another vehicle is stationary at the stop sign.
Yes, because if you widen the curb on the other side, the tanker doesn't need to go over, clip the corner of the stop sign.
But that's not proposed at this stage. That's a risk process to be looked at if you were to get an approval. Is that correct?
Correct. And what we said, that can be a condition of approval. Correct.
Have you actually done any modelling which shows the turning pattern of a vehicle if there is another vehicle stationary at the stop sign?
No.
I'm just going to stop there, because the modelling shows the sweep of the vehicle. So it has been done. And it indicates that it clips that stop sign. So both are correct in their answers. At the moment, it would appear that there could be a problem, but if this were to be approved, that would have to be something that the city would monitor, or there would be a process. And if you were of the mind to approve it, you could put a condition on saying that curb on the fuel station side has to be widened to allow the full sweep to remain in lane.
On the other side.
It's still, at the beginning of the question, I did actually ask about the queuing that would result from a vehicle being stationary whilst waiting for another car to exit Marion Street. So I would assume, and correct me if I'm wrong, that there might be additional flow-on effects from queuing, either because the site is so small and not enough vehicles can queue actually on the site, or queuing in the street, or queuing on Water Road whilst there is, for instance, low fuel days when there's a lot of sales. So obviously there are different perspectives in the room, but I personally have not seen anything yet that shows me all the solutions to this. So I just wanted to understand your perspective on how these things would be dealt with.
Generally speaking, for any application, you can't create a scenario that there will be no queuing whatsoever, whether that queuing is associated with the shopping centre, whether that queuing associated with the fast food development, whether it's the school development. You do get certain circumstances that you will get some queues. That is an accepted fact. So you cannot design a situation. It's not standard practice. Nobody does it, because you just cannot have a situation that you design a solution that there is no queuing whatsoever associated with any land use on Marion Street.
My final question on that is, Do you perceive that given this site is so small compared to other sites that where petrol stations have been built, do you perceive that queuing might in fact be a greater problem than other sites?
No, because this site has got less bowsers than other sites which are bigger than this site.
Thank you. So you and the gentleman from Planning Solutions said that you're involved in hundreds of applications of this kind?
Yes.
Okay. And you've provided several examples of photos of other petrol stations in your various submissions. And yet you've not provided an example that is a like-for-like comparison with the side street access issue that we're dealing with in this application. And yet you've mentioned earlier that you can kind of imagine some examples where it might be similar. I'm just curious why you didn't include any examples that were a relevant comparison to the side street access issues in this application.
I'm going to jump in there, I think quite clearly because the issue is actually about health. The examples they were giving was proximity to schools. It wasn't about traffic circulation.
No, this was going back to an earlier...
That was the question that you asked. And yes. They, yes, that's right. But you're asking why did they not include those?
I didn't ask a question about health.
No, I know you didn't, but you're asking why didn't they include examples with minor street access?
Yes.
Because the point they were making is proximity to schools. They're two different points.
Okay, well, going back to the issue of side street access then, you did mention that there were some examples that you could remember. Have, in the time that you've had sitting down after saying that, have any of them come to mind?
Well, I did mention it, that there was a number that I don't recall the name of the side roads, but there was a number on Albany Highway, recent applications on Reddiston Highway, and on Oran Broad that we have been involved with, that the side street is an access street. Okay. But I don't recall the name of the side street. I'm pretty sure if you investigated yourself and you've been probably...
I'm pretty sure that you would have provided that information for my consideration if it was relevant.
Well, we didn't know what your consideration is going to be to you right now.
I'm going to stop there. Yeah. Thank you. This is not helping... As presiding member, I'm here to guide you somewhat and to say to you, no two developments are the same.
No.
None. So there's no such thing as precedent. So I would guide all panel members to take this on its merits and what you believe, whether it meets your criteria.
Thank you. I'm aware of the requirements of considering
this.
We're
not going to have an attack on one another.
Well, I think that's an unfair characterisation. But my question goes to the intimation that they gave that it is standard practice for access issues such as these to be overcome.
I know, I
and I'm
your
exploring.
Position. Okay.
Well, I don't have a position, I have a question, and I'm exploring that.
Okay, well, the question, please.
I can give you two examples, actually. The Northwest JDAP in the last 2 months, have actually, 3 months, sorry, approved two BP applications in the city of Wanneroo, and I'm personally involved in them. One was Maroochydore Way in Clarkston, where it's a side road, and adjacent to the Nearabup Road, which is another regional road in the same circumstances as this. And access was provided from that road. The other side was another BP in Jindalee, which was to be a new side road into the residential estate. Not yet constructed, but it was as part of the overall subdivision of the site. The development application was approved in both instances, with tanker access provided off those side residential roads.
In those applications, was there any clipping issues with existing stop signs, or did it require any variation of the curbing in order for the access to...
I will just give you an example of another recent approval about Southwest JDAP.
So, sorry, just before you move on to that one, if I could just
but this example has...
Yeah, sorry.
Your
just
version.
Before you move on, can I just get an answer to that question? So in those applications that you cited then, were there any clipping issues with stop signs or any variations required for the curbing in order to facilitate access in those examples?
Yeah, Yes, there was modifications required to the crossovers to get into the site and curbing of the alignment next to the crossover, but both roads were designed basically to not require any modifications. And I think Benham outlined earlier, condition 8 of the alternate recommendation without prejudice conditions actually provides the scope there to have any modifications required to the existing roadway to ensure that we're not going to clip any cars parked at that stop.
Would you like to give me an example? Yeah. This was recently approved, probably about 2 weeks ago. Southwest JDA on the corner of Main Drive and Ridge Boulevard in Baldivis. The similarities are very the same. Ridge Boulevard leads to a residential area. The corner site is a similar sort of zoning, and adjustment to the corner intersections had to be made as part of that process and as part of that approval.
Thank you.
Hi, Judge, any questions?
Yes, I've just got a couple for Josh, I think. Just want to go back, and I don't want to dwell on too much, but 1,050 metre squared site with 23 metre width on one side and 45 on the other. Can you give other examples of where they are similar site? Or are you familiar with that as being a common site?
It is a small site where we acknowledge that off the top of my head. Generally, they range anywhere from 1,200 to 1,500 square metres, slightly bigger. So, but yeah, we feel we've demonstrated that at good point.
And I just think it did get picked up in one of the presentations, and I noted it on the title, the right of carriageway easement, so to the land. Is that a constraint, or do you see that as...
To be honest, that easement at the rear is probably one that is a relic from the past that was associated with the existing developments there. We've identified it and we're not constructing in it, but we feel that that's an easement that in the future could probably be taken off, and we'll have those discussions with that neighbour. But in the, I suppose, the purpose of this application, we've identified it and ensured that we're not constructing within that component.
Is that the one that's between the two, so it's on Walter Road?
Yeah, so it's actually the rear of the retail building at Burdens, our site, and we have the benefit to the adjoining property. But in fact, there's actually no crossover currently there that allows for that access to them.
And just the noise assessment, is there something you would normally carry out in relation to the site? Is it just because you didn't feel there was any matters that were likely to... be an issue, and that's why you're happy for it to be conditioned?
So I'm not an acoustic engineer, but as I said, I've been involved in a number of service station developments. Generally, we provide a noise assessment for 24-hour operations. Mm-hmm. So the noise between 10 p.m. and 7 a.m. is the main criteria that needs to be considered. Our site is open, we acknowledge, an hour after 10 p.m. and 2 hours before. But we do know with these types of developments, it's more of a perceived impact and noise. A lot of the new sites are quite silent. So the main noise issues relate to plant associated with the buildings, which is very similar to any commercial building. And they will be located on the retail building as far away from the residential as possible. And the other components... I think it was previously outlined, the Walter Road East and the traffic along there. This is actually having vehicles travelling through the site at a slow speed, so it's actually not a large noise generator. And then the other component is waste being removed from the site and deliveries. So actually in the noise regs, you're required to have waste removed from the site between the hours of 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., which is actually in the daytime criteria in accordance with the noise regs. And with tankers refueling the site, this is actually gravity fed, so it's not a big noisy pump that requires the tanker to refuel the premises. So it's actually quite a silent procedure. So we feel confident with our experience and that this can be adequately demonstrated as a condition of approval.
Just one small one in relation to Walter Road is the elevation of the building, the convenience store component itself. the council's recommended conditions without prejudice include some matters to address. I suppose to improve the elevation there, because it's glazing. Is that something that is able to be accommodated? If
yeah, we're supportive of that, and we're happy to update the elevation to the satisfaction of the town.
Yeah, I've just got a question to Damon. This is after John's commentary about the lack of accuracy of the number of vehicles or the amount of fuel being sold or whatever. I think it's a really important part of this. So do you have a reaction to that and the fact that there weren't odour, noise and light spilling?
Sure. So let's start with the last first. Noise and light, that's not my area of expertise. I'm not sure if it's this gentleman's or not, but it's out of my scope. That's really for somebody else to address. In terms of the odour aspects that was raised, I think, well, first of all, our scope of works essentially was to look at air toxics. All of the commentary that I understood had been received was in relation to concerns around benzene and volatiles. So that essentially is the scope that we addressed. Now, having said that, in terms of odour, I personally don't believe that there would be an odour issue. I think the VOC's assessment evaluates that. I take on board the commentary that to test that, you could go and complete odour surveys. There are certain techniques to do that. You need a calibrated nose. I have a calibrated nose, I'm pleased to say. But there is a method to do that and to take measurements around a site. But having said that, I think everyone in this room could actually go out and do the same. For those of you that were around in the 70s and the 80s, when you went past the petrol station, it smelt. But I would challenge anyone now to walk past a modern, recently approved petrol station. And as you walk past, then just have a sniff, because that issue has largely been engineered out of modern petrol stations. And the VR1, VR2 that we talked about, that's a function of this. So I don't believe that odour is going to be an issue for this site. And that's easily tested by everyone in this room. There was one.
The other part, the main part of the question, was that the analysis of the amount of fuel that was being analysed seemed quite different to the number of cars coming into the place. It was about a quarter of under John's analysis.
Sure. So there's two aspects, two answers to this, I suppose. The first one, which I think is probably the most important, is that this is based on the proponent's analysis of similar petrol stations that they have in operation, and the quantities of delivery of petrol and diesel are based on those two similar sites. So if I was planning a petrol station, I would say that's probably the best point of reference that you could use is, stuff that I own in similar locations. The other thing I wanted to add, and this was in the DWER's submission, was saying, well, it looks like you've got the ratio of heavy vehicles to light vehicles wrong based on the Perth vehicle fleet. I would actually take issue with that. I think that's quite a crude analysis to say, well, the vehicle fleet for Perth, the whole of Perth, is this versus this. Therefore, what you're proposing for this one site in a very specific location needs to mirror the vehicle fleet for the whole of Perth. Clearly, that's a bit of a specious argument, I would say.
That doesn't help much, but thank you. Feel out of it in my depth in terms of an argument about a quarter of the number of fuels on those things.
Can I?
Yes,
I want to ask a question myself, and it is a hypothetical. But I want to understand, and let's forget the size of this lot because it's a constrained small site. If the building were orientated so adjacent to the boundary with the school, so that it was along that boundary rather than side on and petrol houses capsize onto it, would that actually improve the risk?
I don't think it would make a material.
Wouldn't make any difference? No. Okay, so the buildings don't make any difference to...
The orientation of those buildings?
Yeah.
No, they wouldn't make a material difference.
Okay. All right, thank you.
When I read your report at the end, it stated that ERM does not attempt to verify the accuracy, validity or comprehensiveness of any information supplied to ERM for its report. So I'm assuming that the information supplied to you about vehicles and that's all come from the applicant, and you're just basing your report on these figures.
Look, that's correct. We're only as reliable as the inputs that we receive. There is a saying in modelling that garbage in equals garbage out. We try and obtain the most accurate information to go in, such that we have the most accurate predictions that come out. But ultimately, that's a standard disclaimer that goes into all of our reports, by the way. It's not specific to this project. And it's just there to say, well, there's stuff that really... we weren't responsible for in this process. Now, the fact that we've got this information from the proponent or we've got the information from Bureau of Meteorology, I would suggest these are as accurate as inputs as we could reasonably expect to get.
Can we just... VR2 systems, I believe that they're designed to capture about 85% of the bowels of vapors. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So, in Table 3.1, titled Vapor Recovery Systems for Bowsers, lists the capture rate of 90%, and it's upon this remaining 10% figure that you base estimates for the distribution and volume of volatile organic carbon emissions. May I ask if 90% vapor capture percentage listed in your report is an optimistic estimate?
Whether 90% is optimistic? Look, no, I think that 90% comes from the literature, it comes from the standard Brisbane City Council approach for assessing these things. All of this stuff is estimates, clearly, but I think what we've demonstrated is that, you know, even if we got it wrong by 100%, even if the emissions were double what we're predicting at the peak hour, there's still a significant margin of error, and between what would be predicted and the criteria that is based on health. And by the way, those criteria have their own contingency upon contingency built into them. So I think we're in a good place.
So from my reading, I understand that if the flow pumped vehicles and the vapour extraction pump are not perfectly calibrated, that the vapour capture rate is significantly impaired. Now, given that we are in a state that does not mandate VR2 implementation at all petrol stations, I believe New South Wales are actually in the process of implementing VR2 right across the board. But
that's
we're
correct.
Not
only in Sydney. But.
Only in, okay. But we're not at that position. So if we're not in that position where VR2s are the norm, would you perceive some issues if the maintenance and calibration of these systems are not perfectly kept up to date, that there could be more emissions than what has been modelled in your report?
Firstly, I think it's important to have a good maintenance schedule, and I think that can be conditioned, and I think you can also quite easily audit the compliance to that condition if you so wanted. The other thing I would say in relation to VR2, it's not presented in our report, but we have done the modelling for without VR2. The difference is not that significant. If you didn't have VR2, we would still be well in compliance at the school and at the adjacent receptors, but VR2 has been proposed by the proponent, so it's in there. But all I would say is, even if your VR2 wasn't working at all, which would be highly unusual, you would still be suitably protective of health.
Okay, so page 11 of your report states that no site-specific data are available at this stage. So this Queensland report appears to be a desktop estimation of the air quality impacts relating exclusively to the proposed petrol station, rather than a comprehensive evaluation of all local pollution sources incorporated into an analysis of the cumulative air quality impacts in the area. So I'm curious about, without site-specific analysis of existing pollution, and particularly given it's a busy road and benzene is a byproduct of exhaust fumes, I'm curious about whether the estimates in your report may well be an underestimate.
Sure, so that has largely been addressed in my second submission, where I've provided some background concentrations of benzene along with toluene, ethylbenzene, xylene. As I said in my presentation, there actually is no recorded monitoring within Perth Metro of those parameters, and that really is a function of priorities, how these pollutants are perceived in terms of potential risk to the community. They're not modelled regularly because they are not perceived to be a significant risk to the community. We had to go all the way to Sydney for freeway proposals to look at roadside monitoring to actually find some data. And when you do find it, it's really low. So the implication is you add the overestimate of background air quality, which comes from near roadway monitoring in Sydney, where some very significant roads, you add that to the predictions, maximum predictions, you're still well below criteria.
Okay. So we don't have any, again, that's desktop, there's no site-specific stuff at the moment.
It's not site-specific, right. But it's highly conservative.
Okay.
Any other questions, Catherine?
I'm skipping a few.
Jay, have you got any questions? Because we're getting close to any questions?
It was mentioned before that the fuel supply hadn't yet been determined. I just wanted to get some further clarification whether there has been a fuel distributor identified, and whether you can confirm that this distributor does have 15 metre long tankers within its fleet.
Yeah, it's actually Vibe. They have their own tanker, which is 14.9 metres.
I have some curiosity about the percentages that were presented for diesel sales and petrol sales, because I've been reading and understand that diesel produces a higher level of exhaust with benzenes in it. So I'm having some issues trying to understand that ratio of diesel to petrol that was put forward in the report. It seems to be a really high level of diesel compared to normal petrol. However, the overall sales, as mentioned previously by some of the other consultants, is quite low. So I'm trying to get my head around that figure, that percentage that's been put forward in the sales.
In terms of the diesel and petrol split, Vibe have actually, this is some of their sales from sites that they have. I think it was Nolamara was one site, and another one, the site in North Perth, which they've looked at some of their sales analysis, and that's the split they have. So that's what we were looking at in terms of this site.
Just in relation to the emissions component, diesel is actually less volatile than petrol, so diesel produces less fumes from the actual fuel itself. Now, having said that, so we need to separate combustion emissions, so emissions associated with vehicles moving, and the emissions from fugitive volatiles coming from a petrol station. That combustion emissions is something entirely different. We could talk all day about that. Please do that. But yes, so in terms of diesel storage, that is actually a lower emission potential from volatiles than petrol storage.
I understand the difference between combustion and I do know that diesel fuel, when it's pumped, has less VOC, so I do understand
Correct.
That.
Yeah.
But it seems to me that if you are anticipating a large percentage of those sales being diesel, that you are attracting more diesel vehicles to stop-start in that area. So you're obviously adding to the background pollutants.
Sure. I don't feel I can comment about attracting more vehicles, but my understanding is that we're just talking about passing trade and we're not dragging more vehicles into the area.
Okay.
But, yeah, that's all I have on.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. We'll go to the town now. Do you should make any comments based on some of the information that's been provided or anything further? Just succinct, so keep it to planning issues.
Thank you. I might just make a couple of comments. I did note that Mr. Boardbar, in his presentation, did indicate that the vast majority of customers would be from passing trade, and that those customers were likely to enter the site from Marion Street and then enter back onto Walter Road East from the development site when leaving the site. I might also just make a little bit of comment with respect to the questions and answers that were given with respect to the reference to tankers clipping the corner of the Marion Street junction and intersection when attempting to enter the site. The discussion that was held in that respect was focused on petrol tankers that were approaching the site from an easterly direction and turning right off Walter Road East into Marion Street. I think perhaps the question that was being asked in terms of cars that were queued on Marion Street and wanting to leave the site back onto Walter Road East, I think that really was trying to focus on petrol tankers that were approaching the site from the west and having to turn left into Marion Street. In that instance, a minor adjustment to the curb line at the Marion Street Walter Road East intersection would not address the issue of those cars having to leave Marion Street and the tanker having to hold on Walter Road East before it could actually enter into Marion Street. Perhaps the third comment that I might make in relation to vehicle movements and parking and the like is in relation to the dimensions that have been provided for Bowser's and the space that is available to vehicles to utilise the site when refuelling. As was identified, the example drawings that have been provided do show a vehicle that is situated extremely close to the Bowser, and I think that when a person is having to refuel at a Bowser, that generally they will be located a much further distance from the Bowser than has been shown in that submission from the traffic consultant. As indicated in the submission that I made in the addendum RAR, we have gone back and we've done an analysis of other comparative examples. Although we've not been able to reference a standard for the width between Bowsers, the dimensions that are provided in this application, as we've demonstrated, are significantly lower than those that are found in other comparative proposals. The town would suggest that the dimensions that have been referred to and the parking of vehicles associated with user class 3, which does relate to frequent movements of vehicles, are reasonably the most appropriate movements to refer to. The traffic consultant did make reference to shopping trolleys in conjunction with shopping centres and intimated that shopping trolleys would be directed between vehicles. The width of bays that is provided at shopping centres is not provided to allow shopping trolleys to access between vehicles, and The width of those bays does not accommodate any movement of that kind.
Okay, thank you. Any questions of the town? No, thank you. All right, well, that concludes the questions that we have time for. We have a recommendation. I'm going to take the panel to the recommendation that is in the addendum report, which is on page 234, which is, I'm assuming, the recommendation that the town is wishing to put forward as its modified RAR recommendation, pretty much the same as the original one. So it's a recommendation for refusal for this proposed development with a number of reasons, in fact, a lot of reasons, 16 reasons for refusal. We have a mover for that recommendation, Councillor Wilson, and seconded Councillor Hamilton. Councillor Wilson, to speak to it.
Not particularly. I've read the submissions. I find them compelling and convincing. Also, those submissions taken in combination with the submissions from the Education Department, which is the owner of the adjacent site, I find their reasoning to be compelling.
Thank you. Does anyone have a different position? Catherine, do you wish to speak to the item?
No, I think the submissions have been quite comprehensive, and certainly there are differences of opinions between the applicant's submissions and the town's consultants. However, I do believe that there have been enough anomalies highlighted to recommend refusal of this application.
Thank you.
I think I just want to point out my concerns really relate to the constrained nature of the site, and I think the site layout and design has been compromised as a result. I think it's compromised in terms of landscaping, but also just the layout of the buildings and how it could have better presented to the street. I'm not as concerned about petrol stations being in vicinity of residential areas. I'm more concerned that the site itself doesn't lend itself to this kind of use in this location.
I think there was a lot of discussion about the size of bays. Ride wouldn't go in there if it wasn't going to work. So a lot of that stuff I think would certainly I've discounted a lot of that. I do think access into the site is quite compromised, particularly with school, the school for queuing. I haven't been convinced about the environmental buffer zone not being there, not because there's conflicting advice, and I certainly feel out of my depth to make a call on that. So that's my main problem with that.
Okay. There's a couple of things I want to say from the chair, and it's really as much as anything to the community, and I know communities often feel disenfranchised and like they don't have a voice and that they have limited opportunities to speak. But I do want to raise the point that there's actually a huge opportunity for the rights of the community to be heard in relation to applications like this with their council. This is actually a key use on this piece of land. So it's actually permitted. They just have to meet certain criteria to actually tick that box completely. So if you're really feeling very strongly about land uses such as this within your communities, have a good look at your scheme, because it's actually a scheme that is adopted by your council and by the state, and it's a legal document. So, you know, we are constrained as to the number of issues that we can look at in determining this, because it's actually already been determined by your council and by the state and by the minister as an appropriate use in this location. So I do feel that that's JDAP's kind of come under the microscope a little bit into the decisions that we make, but you actually do have rights and you should be actually speaking to your council a bit more about that. Likewise, applicants have rights as well. So it is a complex process for us to listen to all and weigh them up on their merits and on the criteria that is provided to us. There was a criticism put to me for not letting children speak at this meeting, but that is the reason. It's a complex issue, and that's the reason why I don't allow children to put submissions. However, written submissions were welcomed. I'm not convinced either that the size of this site is a very constrained site. I'm not convinced that actually it lends itself to the circulation of vehicles that is required for this kind of land use. So it's actually going against it. And I think that there's a little too many questions between the two reports in relation to health in this. And I am aware of, and we have approved, a number of petrol stations in close proximity to residential areas. So this is an ongoing issue, and each one is looked at on its merits. And on the basis of this one, I'm not convinced, and I'm not supporting it for that reason. We've all spoken on the item, so I'll go back to Councillor Wilson to finish, to conclude, if you wish to say anything more.
No, other than to thank everyone in attendance for your interest and for your submissions today. I appreciate the time that you've taken out to have your say and input into it all. Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes debate. So I'll put the motion. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. So back to the agenda proper, and we have no Form 2s on this agenda. All matters before the State Administrative Tribunal are noted on the agenda, and I have nothing to add at this time. So there being no other business for this panel, I will close the meeting at 10:55, and thank you for your attendance.
Wow.